Okay, there we go. All right, welcome everybody. In an effort to make, this is not gonna project, I'm gonna project. This is not to help with projection, it's to help with recording, because there's a lot of people who can't be here today, but there's a lot of wonderful Torah that we might share today and that we can share with other people. So we're making a conscious effort to do, to record more of what we're doing and be able to share it with more people. Can you guys hear in the back? We good? Okay.
You look like a giant.
With this little thing? That's right. That's right. Yes. That's right. We look like insects in their eyes. To quote our own tradition. One other reminder, by the way, we didn't mention before. If you are able to put your phone on silent mode, that's just a nice courtesy to everybody. So, as Miriam mentioned, home is our theme. And those of you who follow my writing or my podcast know that that's a theme that I've been really actively working the last several months. And it actually turns out I've been working that for a much longer time. I was looking recently for some source material in my own files and found that I found a teaching of some of this material back from 15 years ago, at least, from the Bronfman Youth Fellows, in fact, from the summer of 2011, when I was teaching for them. So I think I've been preoccupied with this question of home for quite a while. And my hope is that next summer, when I have a 3-month sabbatical and won't be here for this event next summer, you'll get somebody else. That hopefully I'll be working on a book on that theme. So I've been collecting a lot of material and thinking a lot about it. So we thought that home is a really rich conversation, a really rich theme for some of the reasons that Miriam mentioned. Every year when we come to the Berkshires, we have a lot of conversations. Maydell and I have a lot of conversations with a number of our board members, and major donors are up here. And in those conversations, I always find every year there's having a conversation with people about our work is where at least I stumble into where I find myself articulating some interesting, new things that, new realizations about what we do. And it was actually on that trip a few years ago where after so many people had asked, how do you define spirituality? I said to somebody in one of those meetings, our spirituality is our ability to feel deeply at home in the universe. I was like, oh, that's a good bumper sticker. I like that one. That one really works, and started running with that. And I think it's worked really well. And it was very gratifying to hear someone else say it, like quoting me. That was pretty cool. So we wanted to explore that today. And as Miriam said, it also is really timely in the season of tshuva that we're in, of returning. And where are we returning to? So we're going to explore that with the help of, there's a source sheet in your packet, and you can, I'll give you a second to find that. Should be the first thing, I think, right there. That says there's no place like home on it. Can I actually borrow? Yeah, why don't...
Yeah, what do you need?
I just want to use your...
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to use it. Yeah. Okay. And now the orchestra will play Beethoven's Fifth. All right. So I haven't been in front of one of these in a long time. Ooh, okay. You got ready? So my childhood rabbi is Rob Dobberson. Some of you may know him in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And he came to Ann Arbor, I think when I was 11 or 12, and was the rabbi of Beth Israel Congregation of Conservative Synagogue. And that year was around, it was 1988 or 89, and that was when A. Bartlett Giamatti, who might be more famous today because of his son Paul, but at the time, Bart Giamatti was first the president of Yale, no slouch, and then... Before that, he was an English professor at Yale, and then he was the president of Yale, and then he was the president of the National League, and then he became the commissioner of baseball, and then he died too young of a heart attack after just a few years of being commissioner. And for whatever, and Rob Dobberson, Rabbi Dobberson, had a picture of him meeting Bart Giamatti on his wall in his office. It was like a big highlight of that he had shook, you know, Barchi Mahdi's hand. And years later, you know, we've stayed in touch, and he introduced me to the writings of Barchi Mahdi, who, as an English professor, is a beautiful writer and has beautiful reflections on baseball. And as a baseball fan here, you don't have to be a baseball fan to appreciate this, but it's a wonderful way to start. So Barchi Mahdi, home is an English word virtually impossible to translate into other tongues. No translation catches the associations, the mixture of memory and longing, the sense of security and autonomy, the accessibility, the aroma of inclusiveness, the freedom from wariness, as in beware, you don't have to beware, that cling to the word home, that are absent from house or even my house. Right? A house is one thing, but a home is something like, I'm sure you got any number of stories you can go into with a little thing that says, you know, how do you turn a house into a home, right? Home is a concept, not a place, a state of mind where self-definition starts. It is origins, a mix of time and place and smell and weather, wherein one first realizes that one is an original, perhaps like others, especially those one loves, but discreet, distinct, not to be copied. Home is where one first learned to be separate, and it remains in the mind as the place where reunion, if it were ever to occur, would happen. Somebody's calling home. Baseball, of course, is entirely about going home. And to that extent, because it is the only game you ever heard of where you want to get back to where you started. All the other games are territorial. You want to get his or her territory, not baseball. Baseball simply wants to get you from here back around to here. It's a profound, I mean, for those of us, Paley wears his Red Sox hat. For those of us who are serious baseball fans, I mean, this is, and read this with, imagine this in the voice of James Earl Jones in Field of Dreams, right? I mean, this is poetry. This is poetry about baseball. But it's so true, right? I mean, it's very evocative. There's something really deep here about, and not everybody is home automatically a pleasant memory. There's plenty of unpleasant we may conjure up when we think about home also, right? But for those who are therapists in the room or who have been in therapy, and that should cover just about everybody here, right? This is so much of the work is figuring that out, right? And so much of the developmental work that we go through in our lives is about negotiating the home we've come from and ultimately making new homes, a new home or new homes, and new stages of life. I'm gonna save it for a second. Home could be evoked in place, it could be evoked in people. And ultimately being at home, I like to think, is a spiritual capacity that we develop, is the ability to be at home in ourselves, be at home in our bodies, be at home in our emotions, right? To be at home in our lives. When we've done that, the moments we get there are pretty great moments, put it that way. So that's one mode of introduction. Another mode of introduction is from Merle Feld, and this is from a poem that you may know. I'm told it's in at least one Sidur. I think I forget which one. One of the Sidurim these days has this poem in it. Her poem, Dreaming of Home. We want so much to be in that place where we are respected and cherished, protected, acknowledged, nurtured, encouraged, heard, and seen. Seen in all our loveliness, in all our fragile strength, and safe. Safe at home, safe in all our trembling vulnerability, where we are known and safe, safe and known. Is it possible? I'm curious, what do you notice in yourself right now coming up as you contemplate that question? And I'm happy to hear from a couple of people. Yeah.
A lot of nostalgia. An unusual situation. She's 95. Mm-hmm. And she's in the home. And then we also have a home that we make our own. But it's full of all of the things that we're talking about. Recollect all of those memories of the box with all the brochures, cards from her honeymoon.
Wow.
So there's stuff there.
Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead. Oh, wait. I was just inviting more. There was another, anybody else who wanted to share? So, yeah. Yeah, just to repeat, to summarize, was having aging parents who are still in the childhood home that you've grown up in, and they have all the stuff and the trips home and looking through all those things and the memory. And you started with the word nostalgia, which is a really interesting word to think about. Yeah.
Just having two thoughts are distracting me.
Yeah.
One is how Hamishness fits in.
Yeah. Right.
And the other is that faith.
Not for everybody, right?
Well, not only not for everyone, that assumes not changing, stable.
Mm.
And that's just not
right.
What it is.
Right. Or maybe that's a question. Does it assume safe? Is it assume changing and completely stable? Right. I might put a question mark next to that in the same way as is it possible? My parents lived in my childhood home for 55 years until my father passed away. And for the last 20 years of his life, like I'm sure many people here, I said to them, you got to get out of here. And you need to, because you are leaving us a mountain of shit that we're going to have to clean up. And there was seriously the day that we had the junkers come to the to the garage and cleaned out all kinds of stuff was like it was like the biggest bowel movement that we've ever collectively taken. It was like unbelievably relieving, It's like, oh my God, we got all of this out of there. And sorry for the imagery. And I carried, I will say, like, I carried a tremendous amount of resentment towards my dad, especially after he died, like leaving us with all of this. And it took me a year until my first IJS retreat. And that I really realized, oh my God, I'm carrying around all of this anger around this. And so home was not, it was not an entirely pleasant thing. And once we got through that stage and there was still more to do with the house, and I left it to my brothers, I said, I'm going to take care of Mom. And she's moved to, she was in assisted living. That'll be my job. You guys take care of the house. I can't deal with the emotional baggage that I have around that. So it's not always, necessarily, it is not simple. It's not pleasant. I think the is it possible is a wonderful question. And I would take us back to Bart Giamatti saying, home is not necessarily a place. It's a concept, right? And Merle Feld saying, safe in all our trembling vulnerability, where we are known and safe, safe and known, is it possible? Those places and those times and those people with whom we can feel safe and known, right? That might be a piece of coming home, a very big piece of coming home.
What about the idea that we all know home is where the heart is?
Yes, we'll get there. We'll get there. Hold that idea. Hold that idea. Thank you, Diane. So Maya Angelou also had a lot to say about home. beautiful things to say about home. We may act sophisticated and worldly. There's a great, by the way, there's a great recording of her saying this. And I think I'm one of the podcast episodes recently. I'm doing 10 episodes on home right now. And I think on last week's, I had her, the recording of her actually saying this, which she says way better than I can. But we may act sophisticated and worldly, but I believe we feel safest when we go inside ourselves and find home, a place where we belong. And maybe the only place we really do. Related, she says in another book, the ache for home lives in all of us. The safe place where we can go as we are and not be questioned. I think that's the freedom from wariness that Bart Giamatti is talking about. I don't have to be where I can let my guard down. I'm known. I'm safe. I'm loved in this place. Again, that may be a childhood home. That may be a home that we currently live in. That might not be a home that we ever lived in. It's an experience or, you know, a particular time in our lives. Or maybe it's right now. Can we cultivate the spiritual ability to, in this moment, find that place that she's talking about where we can go inside ourselves, a place where we belong, and maybe the only place we really ever do? So, home is a big, big, big piece of Thich Nhat Hanh's teaching. Anybody who has ever read any of his work or has gone to Plum Village, or listened to sits on the amazing Plum Village app, by the way. Anybody who wants to check out a great meditation app, Plum Village, awesome. And anybody who wants to help us make an app that is as good as the Plum Village app, talk to me later. So this is from a book. I actually stumbled on this book. I didn't know this book, but I every time I'm at Trinity Retreat Center, which is where we do a lot of our retreats, just south of here in the thriving metropolis of West Cornwall, Connecticut, which is just west of the thriving metropolis of Cornwall, Connecticut. But Trinity, they have this wonderful little library on the first floor. And they always stock it with really interesting books. And so I was in there one day just sort of perusing, and I saw the title, Going Home, Jesus and Buddha as Brothers. The Jesus and Buddha part was less interesting. The going home was very interesting. And so I grabbed it off the shelf and like, wow, does he have a lot to say? And it's some transcriptions of Dharma talks. So you'll hear that. He says, what is the meaning of true home? In the last Dharma talk that I gave, we talked about a wave. Does a wave have a home? When a wave looks deeply into herself, she will realize the presence of all other waves. When we are mindful, fully living each moment of our daily lives, we may realize that everyone and everything around us is our home. Read that again. When we are mindful, fully living each moment of our daily lives, we may realize that everyone and everything around us is our home. That might be the essence of his teaching, actually. Isn't it true that the air we breathe is our home? That the blue sky, the rivers, the mountains, the people around us, the trees, and the animals are our home? A wave looking deeply into herself will see that she is made up of all the other waves and will no longer feel she is cut off from everything around her. She will be able to recognize that the other waves are also her home. When you practice walking meditation, as we might have a chance to do a little later, walk in such a way that you recognize your home in the here and now. And not just walking meditation, when you're sitting meditation, whenever you're practicing, right? Can you walk in such a way? Can you sit in such a way that you recognize your home in the here and the now? See the trees as your home, the air as your home, the blue sky or the cloudy sky as your home, and the earth you tread as your home. This can only be done in the here and the now. which is a bit of a counter to the notion of nostalgia, right? That its home is not actually necessarily nostalgia, sort of a, it might be a displacement. At home, he's saying, can only be done in this moment, in this place. Sometimes we have a feeling of alienation. Thinking about the time of Tisha B'Av and the moments after and the weeks leading up. Estrangement, exile, alienation. Sometimes we have a feeling of alienation. We feel lonely and as if we are cut off from everything. We have been a wanderer, Jews. We have been a wanderer and have tried hard, but have never been able to reach our true home. However, we all have a home, and this is our practice, the practice of going home.
Mic drop.
Just let that one sit. How's that land with you? Yeah.
So what I'm thinking about is the Jewish experience of exile. That not this isn't about suffering Olympics. You know, we're more this than some other group of people who have their own experience of alienation or exile. But I know from my own experience as a Jew, I never feel quite at home in America. I never feel quite. It's so much of our traumatic, the inheritance of anti-Semitism that no, you're not at home, and keep a bag packed by the door in case you have to run. I think it's one of the reasons why so many Jews have been drawn to meditation practices.
Yep.
To kind of cut through all that, rather than live in that sort of constant anxiety of when's the other shoe going to drop?
Yep.
So that you can never quite get down to that place. And so for me, this is particularly related to inherited Jewish trauma.
Yep. Yep. And I think in the same vein, reading Maya Angelou or reading James Baldwin or reading, you know, you go through the canon of African-American writers, there's a lot of resonance right. that I find, you know, and that's
right.
part of the resonance.
I'm not claiming, yeah. you know, but yeah. it is my Jewish
yeah, message absolutely.
That's with my mother's milk, as it were.
Yeah.
And it requires a lot of sort of, you have to wade through this stuff to recognize that bottom level of anxiety that kind of permeates our Jewish experience, and then figure out how do we breathe under that? How do we cry our way under that?
And if we had more time, I would go into also, we're not going to touch on here so much, but I think one of the things when I read this is I love it, and I say, as a Jew, I'm not so sure. Not from that perspective, actually, from the Jewish trauma piece, but from the we do have a place, like we you know it's like no you know we're not meant to be wandering, and we're not necessarily I mean for me anyway I always ask the question, are we actually supposed to be here? Or at this point, there is a place, right? However screwed up it might be right now, there's like for the first time in 2,000 years there is a chance to be in the Jewish homeland, and that's a real question. Right, I ask myself the question on a regular basis, like, what am I still doing here? Right, and it must be 11 o'clock. That's right. Mark, were you going to say something? Right. Right. And how many people are spiritually homeless, despite having the four walls and the roof, right? Or even having a very fancy four walls and roof that costs millions and millions of dollars. Are they actually at home? Right? Is anybody home? But is anybody home right here? Or maybe is anybody home if for your Yom Kippur? Mitchell, and then, yeah.
So when I was listening to you read the Chicken Hind piece, it felt distinctly Jewish.
Mm, yeah.
Because to me, this is the Shema.
Yeah. This is the Shema, you said? Specific? Yeah.
And for me, it's a Jewish response to the yearning that Maya Angelou and Merle and Bell identify.
Yeah.
And so both the yearning strikes me as very real, but yet our tradition has responded.
Yeah. Beautiful. Bob, were you gonna?
Yeah, I was just gonna say that what came up for me is just the idea that it's always aspirational, and for everybody, and there are moments when we live right there, and there are moments when we're very far away, but it's always aspirational. It's what we want.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're at bat, you always want to get all the way around, right? Yeah. And come back home. Yeah. But most of the time, you don't. At least if you're a baseball player. Yeah. That's right. Shira?
I was thinking of home not being a noun, but being verb. So when you were reading, my emphasis, if I was listening to you, was not on the practice of going home, but the practice of going home.
Yeah.
And I remember coming back from college thinking, I'm going home.
Yeah.
And that feeling I can still take, I can taste it, I can feel it. And when I get off the highway and I'm going through Lee and I'm getting up and I'm going up 20 towards my house,
yeah.
I'm going home.
Yeah.
And that centering emotion. To me, it is extraordinarily powerful.
Yeah.
And I still feel it. As a Jew, I think I don't know that I ever want to get home because it feels final.
Yeah.
Going home feels like I'm on this journey.
Yeah, that's really, really wonderful. And it evokes, I mean, same. And I hadn't thought about this before until you said it, but just that feeling of, yeah, the going home is often better than the actual arriving home, right? Like the feeling of, oh, it feels so good to be going home. You know, like that's a great feeling. Then when you get there, you know, is it really everything? No, it was like, and it's also interesting, just Mitch, I'm not sure if you meant this part of the Shema, but in the V'ahavta paragraph, right? So what does it tell us? V'dibarta bam b'shivtecha b'veitecha. You speak of them when you are dwelling in your house. U'velechtecha b'aderech, and when you're walking. Which means you're always either at home or you're walking. It's one or the other. You're always either at home or not at home. It's a binary, right? I'll also mention, since we're talking about when you lie down and when you rise up. Traditionally in Buddhist practice, there are four dignified postures of meditation, which are sitting, walking, lying down, standing. Interesting that we have the same four in the Shema. But that when we are at home and when we are on the way, right? And you're always on the way either to or from, it would seem. Or maybe when we're wandering, it's when the real when the Torah describes Cain as being navanad ba'aretz, that he's listless and aimless and wandering the earth, right? A wanderer, condemned to be a wanderer, is maybe just never even to have an idea of where home is at all anymore. So for those of you who've seen the Odyssey, I saw it on Sunday night. I mean, it's like that whole period of just, you don't even know where you are. You're completely lost and you don't even have an idea of home, right? Maybe that's what it is. Susan, and then we're going to go on.
It just makes me, this last comment made me think about leaving home.
Yeah.
Leaving home, personally for me, is so hard. No matter where I'm going. Coming home is such a treat. And until my feet are, as I leave home, until I'm grounded in myself, it's very difficult. And the anticipation of leaving home.
Mm-hmm.
Is dramatic.
Yeah.
And it's about leaving a very secure place where you're in touch with nature, you're in touch, you have your own bed, you're known.
Yeah.
And I think it's about, for me, going to the unknown. And it takes me a while to stabilize.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the coming home.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I travel a lot for work. I never have a good night's sleep the night before I have to travel. Like, I mean, never. I can just anticipate it because, like, and it's not just about like the spilkes of like, do I have everything at this point? Like, packing is not an issue, but it's really, there's something destabilizing about leaving, even if I'm, you know, taking 25 trips a year. I mean, it's still, yeah. All right. So we're going to start to move towards now the question of how does this show up in this season of tshuva and of our holidays? With one, we're going to take one slight detour to address Dayan's point. So, really interesting. The first teaching in Masechet Yoma, the Mishnah, the Talmud, that deals with Yom Kippur. Can I get a volunteer? Actually, no, I'm not going to get a volunteer because I want to get it recorded here. I'm going to read it. Sorry. Okay. So the very first teaching in the Talmud about Yom Kippur is this. 7 days before the Day of Atonement. Shiva Yamim Kodem Yom HaKippurim. 7 days before the Day of Atonement. What do? We sequester the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, from his house. Interesting. Mi Beito, from his home. We take him to the Palhedrin chamber. This was a room in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple complex. Okay? So they would take the Kohen Gadol from his own home. They would put him for a week in this place in the temple. And we prepare for him another priest in his place. Right? So while they're doing this, by the way, he's prepping. Like he's going over. Like it's a big ritual, as you remember, right? So it's the rest of the Mishnah details. You know, we're going to go over everything that he has to do. There's all these wardrobe changes and, you know, motions and sacrifices he has to offer. But in the meantime, what else do? We prepare for him another priest in his place. For perhaps there will occur in him a disqualification. Maybe in that week, something bad will happen, right, to him, and doesn't have the ritual purity status to offer, to do the things that he needs to do on Yom Kippur. So we got the bullpen up, right? That's right. From the first pitch, you've got the bullpen is ready. There's a guy ready to come in, right? Now, catch this. Rabbi Yehuda says, we even prepare another wife for him. Why? For perhaps his wife will die. That'll be a problem. Why? As it is said, and he shall atone for himself and for his household. Ba'ado uva'ad beito, says the Torah. He has to atone for himself and his bayit, and his home, his household. And what does Rabbi Yehuda say? Beito zo ishto. His household, his home, that's his wife. The sages said, and so then this is also really interesting, if so, im kein ein ladavar sof. You'd have to appoint just a whole bunch of wives, right? Because what if something happened to the next one, and the next one, and the next one? Or, you know, and we have one backup guy, but we're not worried about having infinite numbers of, you know, arms in the bullpen that are ready. So there's two things that I think are really interesting here. Number one is the notion of bayit, of home, here is not about a place. It's about a relationship, right? It's a household is defined as a relationship, a marriage in this case, but relationship, family. Family is what's meant by home. So that's really interesting. Also what's interesting, I just want to point out, so parallel to this, I didn't bring it here, but the first Mishnah, the first teaching about Pesach in Masechet Pesachim also is about, it's not on your sheet, but I'll just tell you, includes, it starts with the search for chametz that we do on Erev Pesach in our homes. And it asks a question, how far do you have to search? Do you have to go into a room that you know there's no chametz in? There's one position that says, yeah, you have to go into every room, regardless, even if you thought there's, I didn't take any chametz there. Why? Because there might have been a mouse that took a, dragged a piece of, right? And I got to go look. And the response from the sages is exactly the same words. In kain ein le davar sof. If we ruled that way, there would be no end to it. Now, for those of you who are Kabbalistically oriented, if you hear the words ein le davar sof, ein sof, there's no end. Ein sof in Kabbalah is like the ultimate reality of the divine. There is no end. It is divinity without limitation. Home is defined in a certain sense as like, how do we create a container for the infinite? Perhaps. Both of these Mishnayot about our most important holidays, right? Start with home and start and end with the language of Ein Ladavar Sof. There's no end. There would be no end. And so we have to create a container as human beings who are limited in time and space. We create a limitation around that because we have to be able to relate to it. And that's a little bit what home is, right? Or maybe a lot of what home is. And we're creating that. We're creating that. And we have here specifically just expanding our idea that home, it can be in relationship and not only in space. Or maybe it's the place where relationship takes place, right? Where relationship is. So I want to hold that. I also want to bring up the idea from the most obvious place in our holidays where we deal with home is the sukkah, right? So the teaching in Masechet Sukkah in the Mishnah is kol shivat hayamim adam oseh sukkato keva uveito arai. All 7 days of Sukkot, a person renders their sukkah their permanent residence and their house their temporary residence. So we invert this notion of permanence. We remind ourselves to go back, I think, to that point about like, is it unchanging? Is it completely stable? It's never completely changing and stable, right? We go into the sukkah for 7 days to remind ourselves that no, it's completely fragile, actually. And we try to make this thing that is temporary into the permanent thing, and we treat the permanent thing, quotation marks, as temporary. We recognize its temporariness, right? Perhaps. And we upend our idea, or we renew our experience of home in doing so. Let me pause there. And just ask if there's what if anything is arising for you in that.
It's something ultimately about death. That we are temporary.
Yeah.
We like to believe in permanence very hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do we refer often, not so much in our tradition, definitely in the African-American tradition, referring to death as going home, right? That's your ultimate going. So many things I didn't put on this sheet because I wanted to keep it short, but I should have put this one on. There's a great meme that I saw on Instagram of, it's a picture of a guy, a baseball game. At the end of a baseball game, everybody know the idea of a walk-off home run, right? So you hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth that wins the game for your team, and as soon as the guy rounds home plate, you walk off the field because you won, right? So it's called a walk-off home run. It's like the most dramatic play in sports, and definitely in baseball. What fight me? Anyway, so. And so what happens when a guy hits a walk-off home run is the players all run out of the dugout and they're all like jumping up and down and like greeting him when he comes out. And so the meme says, this is this guy running, you know, down the third baseline towards home. It says, there's evidently somebody who like collects these pictures because he imagines that this is how everybody should be greeted when they get to heaven, right? Like, could you imagine that this is how you're greeted when you arrive in heaven, right? Like you're coming home. Amazing. And everybody's just like rooting for you and like, oh my God, you got here, you know? Isn't it right? Isn't that awesome? It's such a great image. Michael. Everybody walks off the field. I don't know. It doesn't feel great for the other team. I get that. But yeah, that's right. Go ahead. Yes, exactly, right? Yeah, it's a homecoming. Michael, and then we're gonna go on. Yeah.
So a couple of thoughts. So we have background home I grew up in, which I'm going back to next week, became a pizza parlor. It's the great pizza parlor in Provincetown. Yeah. So, and one of my mentors always said to me, the only constant in life is change.
Yep.
Which is a reminder
for me.
And then I fast forward to this week's Parsha and the Sam Feinsmith's teaching of Breslov. Talks about how time is a vertical, that if we become centered, time disappears. About the comment about the Shema, but time disappears. The vertical is sort of our physical life, but if we truly become centered in the divine, in our core, time disappears.
Mm.
And we can be home for a moment in ourselves and in tune with the divine.
Yeah.
And that's a totally different home.
Right.
Again, where time disappears.
Right. Right, space and space-time continuum, and well, Star Trek, absolutely, So to that point, and this gets back to Diana raised the point. What about home is where the heart is? So, if there's a whole section we could do here on Jerusalem, and Jerusalem as not only a physical Jerusalem, but a spiritual Jerusalem, the heavenly Jerusalem, and the place where we direct our bodies and our hearts to. So the Mishnah, one more Mishnah to teach, is on the next page. So it says, if you were riding on a donkey, as one might be in the ancient world, if you were riding on a donkey, and the time comes that you need to daven, it's time to daven mincha, what do you do? So one who was riding on a donkey should dismount and pray. You get off the donkey and you daven. And what do you do when you do that? Of course, we all know you turn to face Jerusalem, right? And you see this, by the way, in contemporary Israel. If you're ever driving, late in the afternoon on the highway, you will definitely, if you haven't noticed it before, you'll see it the next time you go. Late in the afternoon, you'll see somebody pulled over on the side of the road. It's time to daven mincha, and they're davening by the side of their car, right? If one is unable to dismount, one should turn their face. Maybe I can't get off. I got to get inside. It's getting late. So what you should turn so you're facing Jerusalem physically. If you're unable to turn your face, what do? And this is the minimum. This is the essential thing that you have to do. They focus their heart, yichaven et libo, keneged beit kodesh hakodashim. You focus, you direct your heart opposite the Holy of Holies. So you imagine yourself, right, into, I'm standing in the presence of the divine. That's what we're supposed to do when every time we daven, every time we pray. The rest of it is just to help us do that, to literally orient ourselves. So you physically try to set it up. But even if you can't physically do it, the whole point of physically doing it is in order to make it happen here, which is going home. To be spiritually at home is yechaven et libo, to direct our hearts towards the Holy of Holies, the home, as it were, of the divine. So what does that set up? In relation to Thich Nhat Hanh, to me, I think it's actually saying that home is both. There is a physical location because we are temporal beings who live in time and space and we're limited. And that's why the Torah gives us the opportunity in the mitzvah to create a mishkan, to create a dwelling space for the divine, which is a mind-blowing idea because how could you possibly ever contain the divine, right? That's the fundamental problem. But it's a concession. We know we need that. We need that. We need a place to sort of be able to direct ourselves physically. And that's always available to us no matter where we are, in any time, in any place. Even if you're riding on a donkey and it's late in the afternoon, you gotta daven mincha, right? So it's both. It's both that we can be at home in a physical place with that divinity. We can also be home spiritually even without the physical place. We can access, God is available to us wherever we are, regardless of that place. When you think about, there's a teaching about the Magen David, the Star of David. What is that symbol symbolizing? And one explanation that I love is that it's two arrows. It's two triangles, right? One triangle points up. The divine is transcendent. It is someplace beyond. It's not here right now. It's some other place. The other is a triangle pointing down. The divine is right here, right now, completely accessible in me and in this moment. And the point is, it's both. It's not either or, right? It's both. So the last section we're gonna look at comes from Alan Liu, and I know that I'm sure there are some people here who read Rabbi Alan Liu's book, This Is Real and You Are Completely Unprepared, every year at this time. It's a classic, modern classic. And he has a whole, I think the third chapter of the book is all about going home. By the way, a lot of baseball that he also quotes. He also quotes a lot of baseball. And so what I think we'll do, when are we, remind me when we're ending? Okay, yeah, plenty of time. And I know you've been sitting for a while. I think I want to read this together, and then I'm going to invite you to talk, go back in your small groups and talk. There's some questions, but rather than having you read it out loud, then it's going to just get really noisy. So I'm going to read this together for us. This is just a few selections from that chapter. Abraham, the first Jew, whose nickname Ha'ivri, Avraham Ha'ivri, may very well have meant the one who crossed over, began his biblical journey by leaving the home of his birth, his father's house, the land he was born in, and setting out for an unknown land. Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladetcha u'mibeit avicha, from your father's house, setting out for an unknown land. This unknown land was his real home, the home God had destined him for. And the children of Israel had to leave Egypt, the birthplace in which they had never felt at home, and undertake a 40-year journey across the wilderness to their real home, a place none of them had ever seen. But here is the $64,000 question. Why do these biblical figures all have to leave home in order to find a home, in order to leave again? More to the point, why do we? Why do we have to leave our home to find a home and then leave again? I think this is a profoundly Jewish question, not just because we are wanderers, a people destined to live without a true home for close to 2,000 years while somehow managing to hold on to our identity, but also because the Jewish sacred calendar, the sacred year, embodies this essential paradox of this homeward journey. Nowhere is this more evident than during the months surrounding the high holidays, that quarter of the year that begins right now in midsummer with the observance of Tisha B'Av, the day when we mourn the destruction of the temple, then moves through the high holidays themselves, a period of intense self-revelation and purification, and ends with Sukkot, the time of our great rejoicing, when we erect a house that is not really a house, a home that is not really a home, a time when we seem to have come to the end of a journey only to begin it again. The dream of the lost home must be one of the deepest of all human dreams. Certainly, it is the most ancient dream of the Jewish people. The dream of the lost home, embodied in our national resolve to someday rebuild the Bayit, the home, the great temple in Jerusalem. What's it called? Har HaBayit, right? The Temple Mount, but it's really the home mount, Har HaBayit, the mountain of the Bayit, of the home. He goes on, we spend most of our lives, I think, in this strange dance, pushing forward to get back home. Tshuva, turning, return, repentance, is the central gesture of the high holiday season. It is a circular motion. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik wrote in On Tshuva, his classic work on the Days of Awe, if you are moving along the circumference of a circle, it might seem at first as if the starting point is getting farther and farther away. Right? Imagine yourself on a circle or on a racetrack, right? And so the starting point is getting farther and farther away, but actually it's also getting closer and closer. The calendar year is such a circle. And Rosh Hashanah, a new year begins, and every day is one day farther from the starting point. But every day is also a return, a drawing closer to this completion, the completion of the cycle. The biblical prophet Samuel served the people of Israel in circuit every year. Every year he went from Ramah to Beit El to Gilgal to Mitzpeh, and then finally back to Ramah again. The moment he left Ramah, he was already returning there, Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out. Everywhere he went, he was heading for home. To my knowledge, Camp Ramah has not used that effectively enough as a fundraising strategy, but it's pretty good. Tisha B'Av, the day when we remember our estrangement from God, is the beginning of the process of tshuva. This very estrangement is the engine that drives us on our journey back home, back to God. And this is one of Alan Liu's really great contributions, because like linking those holidays is not something that most of us, I think, were really taught to do. There are Hasidic teachings that gesture in that direction, but he really popularized that idea, I think, and very, very powerfully. So it begins with Tisha B'Av, this movement home. Every moment of our lives, of our suffering, our clinging to our lives, drives us out of our lives. So this is where we get more of the mindfulness teaching here. Clinging to our lives, which drives that suffering, drives us out of our lives, away from home. And every moment, our awareness brings us back, returns us to ourselves, because we need to return. We need to come back. Last section, because we just need to get to the last line, because the last line is just so good. Rabbi Soloveitchik said to the prophet Samuel that although he belonged to all of Israel, his true home was only in one place, Ramah. Although he led and judged in many different places, the force of his leadership and judgment stemmed from Ramah, from his home. No matter how great a person may be, one cannot leave their real home. All of their judgments are derived from there. Our home is a river, a fluid place, a place where there is no stopping point, a place where we can stop clinging and stop being driven out of life. A place of tshuva, a place that will return us to ourselves, where we can feel our lives flowing, healing toward home. We all live in such a river. Each of the years of our life is a river, and our life as a whole is a river as well. And every pebble beneath our feet is distinct, has been brought here by the movement of the current, by chance and destiny and design. The day of Yom Kippur itself atones. That's from the Mishnah. The journey through time, which surrounds it, heals. If you open yourself to them, these holy days carry you home. So I want to invite you, we'll take about 10 minutes. And maybe you want to just actually write, if you haven't already, write some notes to yourself. Why don't we take 5 minutes to do that? Just write some notes to yourself about what's coming up for you. There's a couple of questions here below. If you need pens, there's some back on the table. There's up here. There's up here. There's also pads of paper. You might need to take the nub off the end of the pen to get it to write, evidently. So let's keep it quiet and give everybody 5 minutes of just some writing time, and then you'll have a chance to turn to a neighbor and we'll do a little sharing.